Welcome to Beyond the Show, the podcast home of all things Cannabis Conference. My name is Eric Sandy, and I'm the digital editor of the Cannabis Group at GIE Media. We are heading into a bright and sunny Memorial Day weekend here, and I'm looking out the window at Beyond the Show World headquarters at blooming flowers and crisp green trees. And that means summer is here, and that means the Cannabis Conference is right around the corner. We're hosting our 7th annual industry event August 15th to the 17th in Las Vegas. And right now, until June 7th at least, you can save yourself a couple hundred bucks on registration. Visit cannabisconference.com to learn more. And while you're there, make sure you sign up for the newsletter because we've got a lot of news coming at you over the next couple months here leading up to the show. You're going to want to be on that list. On the podcast this week, we spoke with Nicholas Guarino, the CEO of Naturae, a licensed cultivation and manufacturing business in New York's nascent adult-use cannabis market. As a GMP-certified 100% New York company working in cannabis and hemp extraction since 2017, Naturae's Hoosick Falls facility is the state's largest producer of CO2-extracted cannabis oils. We talked about the shape of New York's cannabis market as things stand today and certainly got into Naturae's jaunty brand, and we also talked about what to watch for in the coming weeks and months. There's a lot of attention on New York, and the market is slowly but surely coming together, and Naturae and Nicholas's team, they are certainly at the forefront of what's happening in New York. So please enjoy my conversation with Nicholas Guarino. Hello, Nicholas, and welcome to the show this week. Very glad to have a chance to talk with you about Naturae and the burgeoning adult-use cannabis market in New York, as well as some recent history in the hemp market in New York, which, these things are related in that state, of course. And a lot's going on in New York, so there's plenty to get into. But before we get into some of the more market-specific questions, I was hoping maybe you could just set the stage a bit and tell us a bit about Naturae and what some of the initial goals were, even going back to the founding in 2017.
Sure. Well, thanks for having me, Eric. So Naturae, we founded Naturae in 2017 when the hemp and CBD business in New York became commercially available for business. Previously, it was only research. And the business back then and the plan back then was really to be cultivators and extractors and then wholesalers of non-psychoactive cannabinoid ingredients. So we went down that path for about 5 years. And essentially, as is a story that I think a lot of people know, the CBD market and the non-psychoactive cannabinoid market was very saturated. Prices dropped substantially over those 5 years. So essentially the story of Naturae for those 5 years were scaling up production massively for outdoor cultivation and scaling up extraction, increasing shifts, increasing production year in, year out, and continuing to make less revenue. So it was like work harder to make less money. But it was an incredible training ground for sure on staying cost focused, on learning to manage scale, on learning to manage, three shifts through several operations. And then, of course, the Naturae story changes quite a bit when New York created the conditional adult use program. And even in 2021, when the MRTA passed, we made a lot of bets on the business and invested into equipment, invested into our facility in preparation for legalization. But we never imagined that it would be through this conditional program, which allowed us to transition into into THC, where hopefully we will be able to see a bunch of other challenges, but have the opportunity essentially to establish our own in-house brand where our margins won't get commoditized as quickly as they did in CBD. Anyway, that was a long-winded answer, but
no, that's great. And that definitely gives us a bunch of roads that we can go down here. And And I definitely want to dig into that sort of point of transition with the conditional adult use program, and certainly understanding that we've got some listeners in New York and plenty outside of New York. But before jumping there, I just want to get a sense too of, you know, maybe even going back pre-2017, for you personally, what drew you to these industries, whether that's hemp at the time or certainly cannabis in general?
Yeah, so my family, you know, for a few generations now in South America, I'm originally from Venezuela, have worked with specialty agriculture. So we work with primarily livestock, though, but water buffalo, mozzarella production, and just specialty agriculture in general. And then I personally just had a strong passion for cannabis, and a bunch of things intersected. I was in New York kind of doing my formal studies in business and finance to come back to the family farm and business in South America and bring some more formal training and structure to the business down there. And in the middle of that, New York opened up the possibility for licensing for hemp and CBD. And I ended up dropping out of school and going straight to as soon as we received our hemp license, going straight upstate to the farm to work on the farm. I was actually the agricultural manager at the time. So we thought it was a very interesting opportunity in New York. I have always had a passion for cannabis, and I'm an avid consumer myself. And I thought CBD was a very interesting opportunity to provide like a non-psychoactive version of, and still is, version of cannabis that could be helpful for a few different things, but obviously primarily inflammation. And so that road took us here.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, yeah, that sort of point of transition becomes this very interesting moment in New York, and kind of unique to New York as well. So far, yeah, in the history of cannabis in the US, at least. When that conditional adult use program was sort of coming together and being announced, what was the, I guess, perception among either your team or just hemp growers in general? Was this seen as kind of like a shot in the arm and a new revenue source? Or I guess, what was everybody's, what were your thoughts when this was coming together?
I mean, look, to be honest, when it started to come together, there was a push from the Cannabis Association of New York, CANNY, who rightfully so was just pointing out that if there is a rush for tax revenue for to launch the adult use market, which it was already a year behind because of all the governmental turmoil and issues that there were with Cuomo and et cetera, that the most logical jumpstart that we could do to that would be to use all the existing infrastructure that we had for cannabinoid hemp cultivation and extraction. And so when that bill was proposed for the conditional adult use program, a lot of our team internally couldn't even, they didn't understand it. Like, I remember I kind of got it right away, and I kind of kept pinching myself to believe if this was true, because our assumption had been, you know, maybe since we're extractors in CBD, we'll at least be shortlisted, or we'll be considered to some extent when the MRTA regulations come out. So when the conditional program went through, I remember I had to pitch like our partner that's in our chief revenue officer and our marketing and sales person. I kept explaining it to him, and he didn't quite get it. And he was like, Nick, what are you talking about that we're just going to go into THC now because of blah, blah, blah. You know, it was actually like, it took some people a week or 2 weeks to really sink in that sort of, you know, this is, I don't know if this is a dramatic way to put it, but sort of like the sacrifices of the past 4 or 5 years had now clearly paid off, because we were going to be able to enter a very large adult use market in the early stages.
Yeah. So, and as you're sort of gathering your wits and gathering materials, what was the state looking for? Because, you know, again, I feel like with a lot of these adult use markets, these states are kind of borrowing regulations from other states that have come before. They're learning lessons from states like Colorado or wherever. But this is, again, yeah, this is kind of a unique situation. So what, in terms of like the licensing aspect, what was the state looking for from your team? What kind of bar were you trying to clear?
Well, so as processors and manufacturers, we had to have GMP. That was one of the primary bars, let's say. We had to have GMP certification on our facility before January 1st of 2022. So it's something that you had to have already completed. And in addition to that, I mean, one note just before I get into some of the basic stuff that they're asking about, we heard from quite a few other regulators through like summits and conferences that the New York OCM and the New York regulators were traveling to Canada, they were traveling to Colorado, to California, all over North America to get insights on what mistakes were made over there, on what. So I know they did a lot of research before they put in some of these regulations and before they put the structure that they put out, and they saw some of the failures in other states. But I mean, essentially from us, you know, we needed all of the evidence that we had been in the hemp program for 2 years, that we had GMP, that we had plans to meet the regulations that were required for cultivation in terms of security, in terms of site plan. The same thing for extraction, you know, very, very sort of typical, but I would say less burdensome application process from what you'd see in any other state to convert from CBD to THC. I mean, it was an online portal where you just went through application question by application question and submitted relevant attachments. It was, in my opinion, if you had everything in place and you were active in hemp and CBD for the past 2 years, it was a very straightforward process.
For sure. And, you know, of course, whether we're talking about CBD or THC or the actual processes behind cultivation and processing, you know, a lot of this, I would imagine, does translate from the hemp industry into adult use cannabis. But overall, for the team, what was that learning or what has that learning curve been like? You know, this is, of course, the same plant, but there are a lot of different business considerations and even, you know, genetic and production considerations. I know this is
Yeah.
kind of a broad question, but what's the learning curve been
No.
like?
Yeah, massive. I mean, so really, we went from being like I said before, a wholesaler of ingredients by the kilogram, right? So we just shipped. We could ship with UPS as well, so we had a deal with UPS. So we would just put in, you know, 400 kilos or 50 kilos or 10 kilos, whatever the order would be, into different containers, packages, and they would just get picked up and shipped off. And we were price takers, and that was it. And whatever the market was offering, that's what we would sell for. And we try to produce more that month. So there's now like two very big challenging sides of the business that are put in front of us that we're compelled to do because of the infrastructure. The first of all, the lessons that we took in CBD, the intermediary ingredients get commoditized first. But second, because the structure in the state right now compels us to produce our own finished products. That's one new business. So we have to manufacture finished products at scale, and then we have to distribute them and deal with all the logistics of distributing them directly to the stores. And of course, distributing just also involves collection of payment, which often is in cash, which was not the case in the CBD world. So scaling manufacturing of a few categories of different products, which we didn't have to do in CBD, and we primarily white labeled in CBD, and then distributing to stores are going to be kind of like the biggest challenges that we have as a company as the market opens up, hopefully a little bit faster, but as it opens up and more stores come into play, you know, there's a lot of balancing to do, obviously, with all of the different SKUs that we have in our in-house brands and with the releases that are coming. And with how big of a state New York is for delivering to every store there.
Yeah, I'm gonna jump into you know, extraction and certainly the in-house brands in a moment, but I think the distribution point is super interesting. And again, we've got folks who will be listening within New York, but plenty outside of New York. And we've been reporting on the opening of dispensaries in New York here at Cannabis Business Times. But just for the sake of providing the whole picture here, you know, we're talking in early May 2023. What is the landscape right now in terms of dispensaries in New York, which, again, bear in mind is, as you know, a pretty large state?
So right now there are 9 dispensaries open, one of which is a delivery only. They're working on their storefront. So there's 8 storefronts. There could be a new one coming this week. So we could get to 10 by the end of this week. So there's really 10 stores, and they're still only covering around 5 regions. So there's still a ton of regions to cover, a ton of areas that need to open up. We are the rollout for New York in terms of production has been very impressive, what they were able to do to turn all of these brands on in the time that they have, and all of this cultivation and extraction. But the store opening has certainly been way too slow.
Yeah, it certainly seems to be the case. And it is just, you know, I mean, I guess like a lot of states, it's a sort of a long process. But in the meantime, of course, being saddled with this distribution is sort of an interesting learning curve to be placed on.
It is. And I guess to that point, and I guess what I was getting with there is that there's just not enough stores for it to be a real challenge yet. But mm-hmm. It's certainly going to become a challenge, I imagine, at some point in 2024.
Yeah, no doubt. So sort of turning back to Naturae and the actual products that you guys are distributing and transporting around the state. You know, I know extraction has been a big backbone of the company, certainly going back to the hemp years, as you had mentioned, and obviously into the adult use space. How have the extraction processes evolved over the last couple of years for you guys moving into adult use?
Yeah, so I mean, we went through a whole evolution in CBD. We extract with CO2, so we have much lower throughput, but a lot higher quality distillate output. Just in terms of taste, smell, and color, because we don't use super abrasive solvents such as ethanol, for example, we don't pull as much unwanted material from the plant. So our post-processing is just simpler, and we're able to create a cleaner distillate. But in the CBD years, the distillate wasn't really a concern. And so that's why that was a bad bet that we made. We spent a lot of, you know, almost $1 million on equipment to make the CO2 process work. And in the CBD world, it was all about isolates. And so when you get to the isolate point, it really doesn't matter where it started, because you remove everything else anyway. And so in the CBD world, we were pushing high throughput, and we would do pre-processing that would allow us to fit in hundreds of pounds per day into the machine, but it was very damaging to the input biomass. So we would have a loss of efficiency and yield. Now with THC, because we've switched over to the THC side, rather than running 400, 500 pounds a day, we're running closer to around 80 pounds per day, a much slower process with CO2, because obviously distillate is our main product. Jaunty, the in-house brand, is a distillate based brand that we currently have in market with vapes and gummies, and we're trying to just produce the highest quality CO2 based distillate that we can. So our pre-processing is a lot more gentle. Let's say we're using a Mobius mill in the pre-process and loading much smaller loads into the chambers, rather than 100-pound loads into each chamber. We're loading 25-pound loads into each chamber. So,
gotcha. Yeah, you know, as we're talking here, I've got the Jaunty website up, jaunty.com, and just looking through. I mean, the packaging looks great because. You know, all of that too is an interesting learning curve to be placed on to get this new product line launched, along with learning all the other aspects of sort of a THC driven market. And I'm a big amnesia haze fan here as I'm looking through these. But I wanted to ask about genetic selection and sort of how, you know, moving from cannabinoid driven hemp products and hemp ingredients. How you went about landing on genetics on the THC side?
Well, you know, so the genetics for for biomass production for distillate are mainly focused on just a plant that can produce the largest weight and yield and the highest amount of THC with a structure that's scalable to harvest and bring in for extraction in an efficient way, right, at scale. Mm-hmm. But when you distill, and this is something that's important to understand in terms of the outputs, like hash versus rosin or distillate or live resin. When you create distillate, the genetics really are what's important in the genetics is the THC content, so that you can get high potency distillate, so that you can get 90%, 95% plus THC distillate. But through the distillation process, much like in vodka, let's say, or any other spirit, you remove all of the terpenes, you remove everything from the distillate, and your aim is to purify it as much as possible. And then you go and you reinsert terpenes that are either cannabis derived or they're botanically derived. Right now, our Jaunty 2.0 that's coming in June, all of our vapes, our 510 carts are going to be cannabis derived terpenes only. But you reinsert the terpenes back in, right? And since you mentioned Amnesia Haze, I just kind of wanted to explain all of that, because there's not much related to the genetic selection and the cultivation to the strains that a distillate-based cart is in any market or in any brand. You essentially have to reinsert terpenes back in. Now, that's not the case for our hash products. So at the end of May, we'll have resonators coming out, which will have two different SKUs of two different strains of hash, Cotton Candy Kush and Papa Smurf. And that is actually true to strain directly from the plant, because we harvest it, we fresh freeze it. And then genetic selection is super important. And I can get into like how we've gotten help right now from a very good friend of ours in California, on genetic selection for this season for all of our wash or all of our hash. But for everything that you see right now in Jaunty, it's really been sort of like all of us on the team meeting and talking about what are our favorite strains, tasting the different strains, and picking our favorite sativas, our favorite hybrids, and our favorite indicas, and really just kind of having fun with it and just like landing at what we all like and having a little bit of voting with it so that everybody's having fun with the brand. Yeah,
absolutely. Well, yeah, and brand development is such a critical part of these adult use markets. What was that process like in terms of developing the brand itself? Jaunty and the look and feel of it.
Yeah, so I have to give almost all credit to Christian Malika, who's again our CRO and my partner. He's just a very, very creative guy, and he's very good at creating a brand in a quick manner. We did, by the way, just to mention, we had a couple of brands in the CBD days that were only like small e-commerce. So when he came on 2 years ago, I sort of noticed that he had this ability to come up with a brand very quickly, get very, very passionate and honestly obsessed with it for a few weeks and the development of it. And we work with this tiny, tiny firm in Connecticut called PBJ Design. Dan DeSorbo there has been working with Christian for years. And one day Christian just came into the facility and was like, "Nick, I got it. I know what it is." And I was like, "What are you talking about, Christian?" He's like, "It's Jaunty. That's the name of it. Jaunty. You know, you take a Jaunty, you eat a Jaunty, you smoke a Jaunty, you have a pep in your step, you're happy. That's going to be the name." And I was like, "Okay, Christian, sounds good." and then he came, they came with a few different logo proposals, and we really wanted to do something that was fun, was sort of inviting to anyone, was sort of like aesthetically just like the word Jaunty is phonetically, you know, just like a fun, bubbly kind of brand. And so yeah, that's kind of what the seed for Jaunty was. Of course, there's been a ton of work after that, ton of iterations, a ton of just back and forth. I mean, we launched V1 and we already have V2 completely ready with all new packaging and et cetera, because, you know, you do speed to market and a few months later, you realize there's so many improvements that you can make right away. But that is our biggest, our biggest focus right now in the early, let's say, quote unquote, non-competitive era of the market is to release the products as quickly as we can. And so we're open to making some mistakes with the marketing and with the branding and then readjusting quickly and iterating on it quickly.
For sure. Yeah. I know it sounds like obviously just a busy summer ahead of you. You'd mentioned some of the hash products that are in the near future here. So for folks listening and maybe looking ahead to like the summer of 2023 or even beyond, could you talk a bit about what might be coming on the hash side and maybe even getting into some of that genetic stuff with California, yeah, that you had mentioned?
Yeah. Yeah. So we're working with Alex Kupamil from Critical Concentrates. He's been extracting with hydrocarbon and with solventless since like 2004, 2005. He's just incredibly experienced. And his brand Critical Concentrates in California was a very renowned legacy to legal brand. And from, you know, 2015 onward, he was in the High Times top 100 most influential people in cannabis, et cetera. I mean, he's got a ton of accolades and he's just very, very, very smart with extraction and with genetic selection for hash or butane production. And so last season, you know, we weren't working with him yet. And we decided to freeze around 10,000 pounds of material, sort of, I don't want to say arbitrarily, but we were like, hey, let's freeze this material because I'm sure we'll be able to extract it at some point. And we got very lucky that the strains that we froze did wash very well. You know, we're yielding very good yields to hash with those. But this year, now that we're working with Alex, he connected us with a genetics provider called Symbiotic, who's a specialized provider in California for washable hash strains. And we're going to be growing 8 different strains at the end of, we're planting them now. We're going to be planting them in the fields in June, and we should have those by October. But this season, we're going to have the 2 SKUs, the Cotton Candy Kush and the Papa Smurf, coming in as rosin for 1 gram dabbables. And then we're also going to produce a 0.5 gram disposable pen for a rosin disposable. That's going to be a Resonators. That's our rosin brand. And then we're going to have Resonators gummies, which will be hash infused gummies. And those will be coming out actually in just a couple of weeks. And those will be strain specific gummies as well. So yeah, I mean, awesome. All of the connoisseur based products obviously require better supply chain management and more planning than just like, hey, here's your license, as happened last year, put some seeds in the ground to get products out. But we got lucky enough at least to be able to get 2 strains that are washing well.
That's fantastic. And I mean, like you kind of mentioned, you know, the market in New York, one has to imagine it's going to start heating up and getting more competitive and more sophisticated. And I know there's a lot going on with, you know, some of the established medical businesses that want to get into the space. And there's a lot of folks who want to jump into New York. And so I wanted to ask, just as we're sort of wrapping up here, what is, you know, from your vantage point, what does the state need to do to ensure long-term success here? What would you like to see the regulators implement over the next 12 months or so?
The most critical thing would be an initiative that's already in the works, which is removing the excise tax, the potency tax that exists currently for producers, which if you're trying to sell material, if you're trying to sell to the market at prices that can compete with the unlicensed market, it's effectively like a 30 to 50% tax on each product. So if we can see that removed and transition into a flat rate sales tax, I think we're going to see more transition into the legal market, and ultimately the state is going to see more tax revenue because the producers won't be as hampered. I mean, right now it's very, very difficult to compete in any way with this potency tax.
Yeah, that sounds I know we've mentioned a couple of things that are somewhat unique to New York, and that sounds like another one. I mean, I guess each state has their own way of levying taxes, but yeah, I could see that as a significant hurdle for sure, especially just with the way that consumer demand shakes out in the early days of these markets. You know, potency is a driving factor.
I mean, we actually have COAs, which is kind of a crazy thing, that are higher potency. You know, we have a range of plus or minus 10%, but with our 85% Jaunty vapes, we have COAs that come back at 89%. And we could claim 90, but it's like, no, we're not going to claim 90. That's another dollar on every vape, right? So we're still within compliance there. We're definitely within plus or minus, but we have our stuff testing higher than what it is, and we're just keeping it in place because, you know, it's definitely a limiting factor.
Yeah, well, the story in New York is certainly one that we're eagerly following. And of course, the story at Naturae is one that we'll be eager to follow, as it sounds like there's a busy summer ahead. But Nicholas, it was great getting a chance to talk with you today. And, you know, it's been fantastic just getting some insight into what's going on in New York.
Thank you very much for the time, Eric. It was great.
And that's a wrap on another episode of Beyond the Show. Hope you enjoyed that conversation with Nicholas Guarino from New York and his company Naturae. I know I did. It was great to get a chance to just learn a bit more about New York and its early steps into the adult use market. It hasn't been the smoothest or quickest ride in the history of cannabis, but things are certainly starting to gel there. And like I said at the top of the episode, Naturae is very much at the forefront of what's going on in New York. It seems like every time I turn around, there's a headline coming out of New York, and you can certainly follow along with what's going on in the New York market over at CannabisBusinessTimes.com. We've got some very recent news as I'm recording this conversation. A few days before this episode comes out, I know there's some interesting news breaking just on the nature of the existing medical cannabis businesses and the ongoing formation of the adult use market. So make sure you check out CannabisBusinessTimes.com for the latest news out of New York, or really any other state, or like we talked about last week, the District of Columbia. We got some Washington, D.C. market news there as well. All of that is going to form the foundation of what we talk about at Cannabis Conference. So if you've been following Cannabis Business Times for a number of years, maybe you get the magazine, which if you're in the industry, it's free, and you should certainly sign up for that. Maybe you get our newsletter each day in your inbox. We're going to be taking those conversations and transplanting them out to Vegas in person and having some fantastic networking and educational opportunities for everyone in the industry out at Cannabis Conference. If you've been to Cannabis Conference, you know. But if you haven't been to Cannabis Conference in the past, this is a fantastic year to jump on the train because we're really offering a lot of things that we haven't offered before. We've expanded the program in some ways, and we're very excited to welcome everybody out to a really terrific show in what is admittedly a very difficult time for the industry. We're hoping to navigate that a bit with you, have some conversations about where the market's headed, get into some of the economics of it, and obviously have fun doing it. So go to CannabisConference.com to learn more about the show this year. We're going to keep having conversations on this podcast that reflect the conference. That's the whole point here. We're going beyond the show. And we're going to see you at the show in just a few months. See you there.